Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey everyone, JJ Cooper, Kyle Glazer, John Manuel joining you on a Facebook Live here on a Tuesday. As always, brought to you by Baseballism. Trade deadline was yesterday, so we're going to talk about that. There's been some very high profile promotions to the big leagues today, and Jack Reimheimer. So we'll talk about that. And we'll take your questions. But before we do that, we do want to remind you, as always, that our podcast and Facebook Live are sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women's, and kids. Visit Baseballism to get cool gear like this, and visit Baseballism.com to get stuff like this. So, as John removes the tag. We start out, we have the trade deadline, we will talk trades, we'll take your questions about trades, I'm sure we'll get some of those. But we'll start out today, we've had some shortstops promoted today, some shortstop slash middle infielders, because Ozzie Albies has qualifies as a shortstop slash second baseman now. But
the plot could thicken, JJ. If he plays some shortstop, what happens? What if he plays shortstop and plays well? We never saw Freddie Freeman third baseman coming. What if Ozzie Albies plays shortstop? John Camargo gets hurt. Or gets banged up one day, and the Braves play Ozzie Albies at shortstop, and all of a sudden now Ozzie Albies looks good. This clouds things. We used to have Dansby Swanson and Ozzie Albies pretty close together. Then Dansby graduated. Ozzie Albies, we lost a little enthusiasm for him because he's really struggled from the right side.
And he's left side.
Left side against right-handed pitchers. I'm sorry. Doesn't have a lot of impact in the bat. But what happens if he gets hot in the major leagues? They use the juice balls there, Kyle. What happens if Ozzie Albies breaks out? What do the Braves do?
I think it's a good problem to have. And I wouldn't say he doesn't have juice. I mean, it's 21 doubles, career-high 9 home runs. I think you're seeing it come. He's still only 20. He was born in 1997.
And his legs provide some juice because he turns singles
right,
into doubles.
He's a stronger guy, even though he's small. He's a small frame guy. I do feel like Ozzie Albies, the Braves can comfortably say this guy's going to be in our middle infield for the future and going to be a very good player. Now, is that going to be at second base? Is it going to be at shortstop? I think it's easy to run down the rabbit hole a little bit there. And you talk about, well, what if he comes up and has a great 2 months? Well, Dansby Swanson also came up last year and had a great 2 months. And now he's back in AAA. So I think it's always good to not get overly excited or overly down on a guy based on what they show in their first call-up, which is generally, if it's 2 months of a call-up in the big leagues. That said, good moment for the Braves having him break through.
And September is the easiest month to be called up because you get to face other September call-ups some too. But the thing about it is that I like about your question is people have to remember, this was not something where Dansby Swanson was clearly the superior shortstop.
That's where I'm going, is that
Dansby Swanson is not a better, is not a grade or a grade and a half better as a shortstop than Ozzie Albies.
Now, one thing that Ozzie Albies consistently does that Dansby Swanson does not do is make contact. This has been the one question we had about Dansby Swanson. Going back to his Vanderbilt days, Vanderbilt players take a big hack. It just is the way they teach hitting. Good for them. I like it. Most pro scouts seem to like it, but you have seen some of these hitters, Brian Reynolds, was one of them we saw lose a little draft helium, and we certainly saw it with Jared Kendall this year with the strikeouts.
I mean, Dansby Swanson, even go back to, I mean, different type of player, but Pedro Alvarez.
Correct, but Dansby Swanson was really where we started to see it. That was the one caveat that scouts really had about him. You know, some scouts were more bullish on his power than others, but everyone thought that he would at least be average, you know, 45, 50 power. But he swings and misses a lot, 84 strikeouts in 95 games this year. I don't think that Ozzie Albies is in danger of doing that. That's just, he's a more contact-oriented hitter. And just, I'm just curious, this is going to be a moment. A year ago, when Dansby Swanson came up, I think we all thought, with good reason, that Dansby Swanson was the future face of the Atlanta Braves. I think that is in question. You just don't see faces of the franchise. I know you hate that phrase, but it's true. You just don't see those guys sent down.
I will
very
say,
often.
One of the things with Dansby Swanson, when I dug into it earlier in the year, I thought was fascinating, was he was swinging and missing on fastballs.
Right.
I mean, it was anything, you know, once you start getting to that 93-94 range, he was swinging through them, and that's a problem. It's one thing if, okay, breaking ball recognition, you know, you can improve that a little bit. When you can't catch up to average major league fastballs, it's a little bit of a problem. And I think with Ozzie Albies, one of the other things that came up a lot and one of the reasons evaluators thought his left-handed swing was a problem was, in fact, his approach. Even though there wasn't a ton of, you know, strikeouts, and if you look at his season line, there was still a sense his approach was not conducive to what it should be in terms of taking these big uppercut hacks.
Right.
When in reality, he's a smaller guy who's incredibly fast, drive the ball into the gaps. If you can elevate it, great. But going up there, taking these scooping, you know, talk about uphill swing path hacks.
Also called launch angle
these days. But for that, for who he was not conducive. And that came back pretty consistently from scouts. And there was some
and the K rate is up this year. His strikeout rate is up.
But it's, you know, it's at 20%. It's not like it's spiked to 28, 29.
Right.
So it's usable. And I think with Ozzie Albies, you see the skills. You see incredible athleticism. You see the arm. I know Braves fans weren't very happy we dropped in the midseason rankings, but that was just a reflection of, hey, there's a hole here from one side. It's approach-based. He's going to have to fix it. But defensively, he's still a stud. Even though he was playing a lot of second basic when he came through here, you could see the quick twitch. You could see the first step quickness.
Oh, he's a quick
twitch
guy.
You could see the arm. I mean, there's no question this is a really good defensive middle infielder. And he's only 20. As long as he makes the approach adjustments he should make and has the ability to make, there's no reason this guy can't be an everyday middle infielder for years to come, and maybe more so than Swanson if Swanson's bat speed turns out to be a problem.
So just needs to make an adjustment. It seems like it's show me that you can hit that velocity. Show me that if you can guess that you can cheat when you have to. Dansby Swanson does have to show me, not me, I don't matter, but he has to show the Braves that he can make that adjustment. I just think it's a really interesting pivot to see that Swanson stays down, Albies comes up.
So we got a lot of good questions already. Before we get to those, though, the other shortstop.
Jack Reinheimer, of course.
The other shortstop who we're going to talk about, Ahmed Rosario, comes up. I wrote the what to expect on him. I want to throw it out to you guys if I'm being too optimistic here. To me, I look at where Ahmed Rosario is, and I think it's very similar to where Francisco Lindor has already turned out to be, which is better than what I expected because the power has been better. But basically, it's what Lindor was expected to be coming when he arrived at the big leagues, which is a really premium defender who's going to hit for average, is going to run, and is going to have a little bit of power.
You know, he's a guy that when you talk to scouts based throughout the western half of the United States that had the PCL and Cal League coverage, and you ask them that ultimate question, hey, who's the best guy you've seen this year? Ahmed Rosario came up way more than anyone else. And there's really a belief that there will be more power than you think if you just watch the quality of contact.
But what is that? What, when you say more than you think, what
18
is
to 22.
Okay, that's...
I mean, it's you know, mate...
So that's Lindor. Then he's Lindor.
Early in his career, you might see a little less, but I think there's an expectation that he's got the ability in terms of he's stronger than you think. He's got the ability to square up any pitch, any count, any velocity. I mean, this is a really, really gifted player, and that's why... You know, there's differences of opinion on some guys, really, even once you get into that 20-22 range. But you look across the game, the top 5, 6, 7, 8 guys, it's pretty consensus because they reveal themselves very prominently. And Ahmed Rosario has done that across the board to everybody.
He is easily one of the best prospects in baseball right now.
Yeah, I know there's at least one ranking out there that had him number one in a midseason ranking. I respect that. I mean, Ahmed Rosario, if you want to tell me that Ahmed Rosario winds up having a better career than Yoan Moncada, I'd believe that. Do I think he will? No, because I don't think he has the offensive upside that Yoan Moncada has. I know he has more defensive value because it's a shortstop, and I think a damn good one. But I don't think 18 to 22 home runs would be, a real leap. He has 17 as a professional. I don't. 18 to 22 would be, that's significant projection. Just talking to guys in the Florida State League the last 2 years about him, I guess he started off last year there. People, I think the main thing is that the offensive game keeps improving, so you can project it.
Right.
But you're still, I think you're double projecting, the scouts.
You have to project, and that's one thing. But
I think you're projecting too great, because I think right now in the minor leagues, he's been a 3 power guy. He's in the PCL, the most offensive league in baseball, and his ISO is barely like 120 or so. It's not, that's, in the PCL, that's well below average power. So the thing that impresses me the most about Rosario is we've had him at 3 futures games now and 2 straight prospect pads. So you get to see him. You get to talk to him. This guy has some presence. He has some charisma.
He can be the shortstop in a New York team.
Right. But not just that. I think he has some clubhouse presence. I like his sense of humor. I like the fact that he's matured. Just talking to him the last 2 years and matured physically. He went from boyish last year to boys to men this year. It will not be hard for him to say goodbye to yesterday when he gets to New York. I think he gets to New York. I think he stays there. And I do think there's impact there. I think your Lindor comp is actually not a bad comp. 18 to 22 home runs, though, I wouldn't see that for 2 to 3 years, and maybe not 4 to 5 years in that ballpark. Because I see him hitting for average more than power. And I think the average will always be ahead of the power. But this guy has a chance to be, I think, a multi-time All-Star in New York. I mean, he is a star. I'm extremely bullish on Ahmed Rosario.
Best shortstop to come up for them since Jose Reyes.
Easy.
And even if he doesn't.
But not as toolsy, honestly, as Reyes. Probably the peak will be below.
And even if he doesn't get to the 18 to 22 you mentioned, he does so many other things well. Even if it's 10 to 12, he's still one of the fantastic players.
He makes a lot of contact. He's improved his walk rate the last couple of years. And he does impact the baseball enough that he hits for a high average. He's not a Judy. So I really like Ahmed Rosario. I am bullish. I do think he's a notch below Lindor. I mean, like Lindor, for me, in that clutch of best shortstops in the game already in year two, I think Rosario needs more development offensively and doesn't have that present strength that Lindor had when he got to the big leagues. I think he'll hit the ground running in New York.
On to the questions, because we have a question that ties into this. Paul Ives asks, so why aren't they bringing up Dom Smith with Rosario?
I don't know that it's because of this, but I mean, like, Dom Smith is just not as good. And you want to talk about having to project the power, you have to project the power. So they traded Lucas Duda. It would make sense for them to bring him up.
From that logical standpoint, like, there's not – Jay Bruce is, you know, they didn't trade away all their guys.
Right. So, it's shocking that Jay Bruce and Curtis Granderson
– and Asdrubal Cabrera
are all still there.
But hey, especially, non-waiver trade deadline.
Those guys are getting through. So really your answer is, yes, the trade deadline has passed. However, the Mets are not done. The Mets are hoping for claims.
I think the Mets are hoping they're not done. A, B, they do also get to evaluate TJ Rivera a little bit more. And one of the places you can play him is you can play him at first. You can play Wilmer Flores at first, which they've done some this year. And you showcase Jay Bruce a little bit more. So I think those are the reasons why. But, I mean, for me, Dom Smith is a good prospect. He's a couple of notches below Ahmed Rosario for me. I don't see him. I see him as very good. I don't see him as elite.
So, Kyle, this one I'm going to send your way. Kevin Rotert.
Kevin Rotert.
Rotert. Thank you. How did the Yanks get away with trading guy with major injuries for Gray? I thought guys had to pass physicals.
Where's Manfred?
Yeah.
No, and you know what? It's always one of those things. We don't know what the other deals on the table were for him. So maybe that is the best deal they could get. We've seen, you know, aside from...
Well, first to answer the question, if you're trading for a guy who's injured, and you know he's injured, they don't have to pass a physical. Now explain why they wouldn't take those guys.
Because you're going on the upside, right? James Kaprielian is a guy that you think can be a front-of-the-rotation type of pitcher. Dustin Fowler you think can be an everyday, all-around outfielder. And if you believe in Jorge Mateo, he's a versatile middle infielder. Thing is, not everyone believes in all three of those outcomes all working out. The A's took a risk here. Now, is it going to pay off? Maybe. I mean, I would put the odds at maybe 30 to 70, but... if that 30% is enough for you, sure.
What's interesting to me about this is that if this does work out, they could end up getting the best haul that they could have gotten. Because if it all works out, Dustin Fowler could be an everyday outfielder who, by his all well-rounded game, impacts the game.
He's a really nice player. To me, it's really fascinating that the Yankees have gotten a lot better at developing hitters in the last couple of years. I don't know if it's because Mark Newman is no longer the farm director, but for a long time, the Yankees could not develop an everyday regular to save their life. From Cano and Brett Gardner through like Austin Jackson, but like Jesus Montero, a lot of guys who were touted, and even the Yankees scouting department would say, we're pretty good at developing pitchers, so ties it a go for us in the draft to the pitcher. Now you see Gary Sanchez. That was a guy where they were very patient.
Gary Sanchez has been around long enough that he spans the, you know, he's been
both of them. Yeah. But he got better the last 2 years. Aaron Judge is the obvious answer. But Clint Frazier now to the big leagues. He spent a year in their farm system. They're hitting on some of these guys, and I think that's a big factor to me that even other teams are trading for Yankees hitting prospects. because if Ken Rosenthal of Facebook.com is to be believed, Ken said, like, late, the Rangers, was it the Rangers? No, someone else tried to get in with the A's on this Sonny Gray trade. It was the Cardinals, including offering Stephen Piscotty. And the A's said, no thanks.
With one of Weaver or Flaherty.
Right. We prefer the Yankees prospects. I don't think that would have been the case 3 or 4 years ago. I think the whole industry was leery of overhyped Yankees prospects. But now you see them doing something in the big leagues, and I think it adds a sheen to players like Fowler and like Jorge Mateo, who's divisive in our office. I like him, and Matt Eddy, we both like him a little bit better than you two guys like him.
And the thing of this is, I like him, but I like him as the third guy. He's the third guy in this deal.
So he's the second guy for me because James Caprillion's made three starts. I love James Caprillion. I love the makeup, but he's pitched three times that count in the last year, 2 years. That's a factor for me. I mean,
the concern is the mechanics are what they are. But at the same time, if he comes back, his stuff bounces back, what it was before the injury, and he's healthy, he has the chance to be the best pitcher in the A's rotation.
Yeah, I have to look at who else the A's have, because they've traded for a lot of guys, and so far, not so good. Hey, does James Caprillion want to learn a cutter? Get ready to learn one, James, when you get to the A's.
I do want to go back, though, and again, part of the study we did, where we went back and looked at how many of these trades actually work out. And the three good prospects for one veteran trade, generally speaking, one of them turns out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, having all three of the guys that you trade for the veteran, not unlikely, pretty much never. We're talking two times in about a decade.
I was going to say, when you say never,
right.
Zach Greinke and the Royals.
That was a good trade
right.
for the Royals.
Well, but I'm talking about the deadline deals, which we've established have a different, you know.
They are harder to have those hit.
Well, if you're going
to
pick one of those three guys, Jorge Mateo has the highest floor. A, he's healthy.
That helps.
B, he's a up-the-middle guy, for sure. C, he's in AA. And D, he has speed, which does not slump. He has the highest floor of those guys. He doesn't have the highest ceiling. You could argue Caprillion has a higher ceiling. I would argue he has the highest floor. Before the injury, I would have said Dustin Fowler.
Absolutely.
Was clearly better. But right now...
If Dustin Fowler stayed healthy, there's a good chance that Clint Frazier might have been in this deal.
Right.
Because...
Fowler was ahead. I would agree. No, I like Dustin Fowler. But I'm saying from a floor standpoint, I think Jorge Mateo... And Jorge Mateo might be a guy whose best years are 5 years from now and maybe one or two teams from now. But I do think he's going to be a big league regular at some point.
Next one goes to you, John. Harvey Irving says, will the Blue Jays contend in 2018 or will it be another drought and famine until Shapiro is let go?
Well, not just because I'm a fellow Greek, but I was all about Alex Anthopoulos and the job that he did in Toronto and the new Toronto regime. I don't think that they've made so many bad moves that's why the Blue Jays are struggling right now. Part of the reason that they're struggling right now is the moves that Alex made to get them over the top to back-to-back playoff series the last 2 years. He traded a lot of talent for that team to get there, and they're hurting a little bit there because, like you said, they're older at the big league level. But the biggest reasons are the guys they're paying $20 million a year to, Troy Tulowitzki and Russ Martin, are no longer $20 million a year players. So I do think they can contend. I'm not sure. I haven't delved into it enough. What happened to Marco Estrada? I don't know what happened, but Marco Estrada turned back into a pumpkin. But it's conceivable that he comes back next year and is better. And that Marcus Stroman is Marcus Stroman. And the biggest X factor, and the biggest reason they're not successful this year is Aaron Sanchez. He's their best pitcher, and he's been on the disabled list. It's either two or three times. So a healthy Aaron Sanchez, Stroman, bounce back year from Estrada, get what you get out of J-Hap. That's their strength. That right now it's been a weakness. That could be a strength for the Toronto Blue Jays. And as long as but the identity of the team has completely flipped under the new administration. 2 years ago, this team powered its way to the playoffs with a ferocious offense. They are no longer ferocious. In fact, they're closer to toothless, like an actual Blue Jay, which has no teeth. But it's ferocious, and we'll peck the hell out of you.
You know, it's
they don't have a big offense anymore. And I don't know if it's just because they lost Edwing or not, but they are now a punchless offense.
I mean, it's the aging curve, and it happens. And one of the things you talk about is these guys have gotten old now. If the trade-off was, hey, you can make two straight ALCS appearances, especially for a franchise that was 20 years plus without a postseason appearance, but there's going to be a down year or two after it, you take that trade every time, and that's the bargain they made, and I think you're okay with that.
I would agree.
Next one, so we got a Cubs question. Brian Peters asks, I know the Cubs system is down, but my question is this. a lot of their best talent is in the way lower levels. Is there a stage ball players have to reach AA, AAA before they're considered among the top prospects?
I mean, from the Cubs standpoint, just ranking their guys, you'd love for those guys to be in full season ball. I wouldn't say, but when you say lower levels, a lot of the Cubs prospects are in like Arizona and Eugene, like their highest upside guys. Their highest upside position player may well be Aramis Ottman, the shortstop. Long, high-waisted, actually kind of a Nico Goodrum type of body, not as tall, but like really long legs and really short torso, but left-handed hitting $2 million shortstop out of the Dominican a couple years ago. He's hitting for power in Eugene. I don't think anyone in that organization saw it coming. He might be their highest upside position player, and Jose Albertos is probably their highest upside pitcher, but they're both in short season ball. Albertos has made 5 starts this year. It's like, he almost envies James Caprillion's durability. So that's why they're not top 100 guys, because there's a lot of volatility there. But, and that's really what it is. There's a lot more risk to all their high-ceiling prospects.
But I would go a step further and say, but no, if you're being very optimistic, if you look at this group that they have right now and say, it's just that they're far away, for one, they are almost lacking in position player prospects, almost by design, because if you look at the drafts that they've done, they needed pitching. And so it has been all about the pitching. The reality of it is it is hard to see the next Cubs prospect that is going to be a top 25 prospect in the game.
I don't know, it might be. That's the thing. From an upside standpoint, and that won't be till next year, more than likely. I mean, like, he would have to have a breakout next year. But they really don't. Like, position player-wise, the Tigers got their last two best guys. Jamer Candelario, I was surprised that he didn't go straight to Detroit, but he's in AAA right now. And then Isaac Paredes. I prefer Paredes because younger, chance to stay in the dirt. I think more of a chance to be an above-average big league player. Or I think Jamer Candelario has a chance to be an average big league regular, which would be fine. But Mark Zagunas, kind of fringy right now. I thought he actually would have been a good fit for certain teams. I mean, he'd be a good fit for the Cubs if he could hit in the big league because he could actually draw some walks and leadoff.
I do want to circle back to the initial question, though, which was, what's the level? And I think one of the things that has come up again, 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 first of all, doing slang in complex leagues versus doing something in full season ball is night and day.
Yeah.
And then what has been said to me ever since I started doing this back at the Victorville Daily Press, and what has revealed itself to be true again and again and again and again, the jump from high A to double A is the single largest jump in the minor leagues, because that's where your tools have to be skills.
Right.
That's the point where if all you still have are tools, sorry. You're not going to succeed. So for me, once a guy makes the successful jump to double A, that's when you can elevate them even more. But especially, I think, once they're in full season ball, then you can really start to say, this is really, there's really something here.
Yep.
And then double A is where, okay, this guy, the elite really separates
themselves.
Because
I'll say, like, but you can also, you look at our top 10 right now, and there are guys in it who are in Class A, one of whom happens to be an ex-Cub, Eloy Jimenez.
Right.
And the reality of it is that the top players jump out, and they can do that in A-ball. But the reality of it is that there are very few of those, and Chicago has had, the Cubs have had, more than their share.
Exactly. Yeah.
They've had their share and about 7 other teams' share over the last few years.
And the thing is, some of their high-ceiling players, even these low-level guys who do have high ceilings, they might turn out to be Javi Baez. And Javi Baez is talented, but he's significantly flawed. He's never seen a high fastball he doesn't like.
Or a breaking ball in the dirt.
Fastball up here.
So yeah, fastball up, breaking ball in the dirt. Fastball up. You don't have
an Indian say, you want to swing at 3 curveballs in the dirt? Okay.
You don't have to mix it up too much to get high. And again, talk about adjustments. He hasn't made those adjustments. So, but he's a productive big league player, but there are limits to it. So the days of the Cubs just churning out superstar hitters, there's going to be a little drought here. But fortunately for them, they have a lot of those guys, and they might wind up having 3 or 4 with Bryant and Rizzo. The next one may just be Wilson Contreras, and that was a guy who did not figure it out until he got the double A, and it really clicked.
And here's where it's kind of funny for me. There's people who are freaking out. Oh man, it's obviously you always want to have some talent in your farm system. It's better to have that than not have it. But if you have to choose, I'd rather have a good young core of hitters in the major leagues versus a good young core of hitters in my farm system.
Yeah.
You take what's in the major leagues.
Every franchise.
And the Cubs have that. So I think it's kind of funny sometimes. The priorities seem to be shifted about what fans are freaking out about. with the group you've got in the major leagues, it's okay. Your farm system is empty because they all ascended to the majors. That's a good thing.
Next question, Mike Elliott. Why has Boston been somewhat quiet?
Because they don't have prospects to trade aside Rafael Devers.
Top-notch
prospects.
Right. I was going to say, the thing about it is we have established
the Angels and the Marlins. And who else was it this week that made a trade that had a bad farm system? It was the Royals.
Yes.
The Royals and the Marlins and the Angels. Those are three of the bottom five. And Royals and Marlins are... That might be 29 and 30.
So they figured out ways. They've started to
move up.
They're
not far above the Royals.
Right, but they're better.
But they've gotten
so they're not 30. So, but these 29 and 30 systems, Kansas City and Florida, those of the Miami Marlins, they figured out ways to make trades. So if you wanted to make a trade, you could make it. But it feels like Boston has decided they're going to go with what they've got, which is, you know, banking on more these hitters showing more power in a post-Big Poppy world. And then that Rick Porcello will be better and that David Price will get healthy. Those aren't bad bets. I can understand why
Xander Bogaerts had a horrendous July. You know,
he's on three down. I just read that.
Yeah, and something where right now, I mean, the Red Sox, for all the hand-wringing, this was their first losing month. It's not like they've completely tanked the entire season. They're right in the thick of the playoff race. A lot of their guys are not performing their best. You know, the Red Sox didn't need, oh, man, we've got to add at least two more bets. You know, go with the guys you got. They've got plenty of talent. Hope they get a little better. There's still two full months left in the season.
And Rafael Devers, four hits last night. It does not mean
that boy good.
But
that boy good.
If he basically gives you a Benintendi-esque final month, 2 months of the season, then your third base problem is largely solved.
And you know, bringing in Eduardo Nunez, bringing in Addison Reed, that's not nothing.
Those
are helpful big league pieces.
Right. And the
Addison Reed deal to me is the trade. Those are the kind of trades to me that every contender should have made, because we have seen having three to four wipeout arms in your bullpen is the difference between winning and losing a
play. And that trade kind of makes you, the low, low cost of Addison Reed makes you wonder, well, then why did they trade three guys for Tyler Thornburg? Tyler Thornburg was really good last year, and it's just bad luck that he got hurt, I think.
Right, but Travis Shaw is better by himself.
I think we can all agree that was an overpay, and it was an overpay at the time. I mean, it was clear. So, but
it seemed vexing at the time. JJ, I do want to ask you, John Urkula asks, if the Braves made a move this winter for Michael Fulmer, when you talk about cost control, that's a cost-controlled, good, young, big league pitcher. What package from Atlanta's top 10, and he should have said top 30, could Detroit, purloin from Atlanta? You are the master of all things Braves prospect right now. What would they get?
Okay, so let's say that a cost for Fulmer is, I would say, less than Quintana. That's fair, but it's still a significant package. So you're not going to get your basically the Eloy version of the Braves, which is Acuna.
But
I do think you start with it's an Albies or it's, you know, you're probably talking about at least two pitchers if that happened, which would be like you're talking about an Allard or Soroka. Again,
insist on one of those guys.
Insist on one, maybe both. Like, to me,
it's 6 months out, between, Kyle Wright could be available.
Kyle Wright, you know, to me, you're talking about at least two of those guys. And then you are talking about going a little bit lower down, which is the Tuki Toussaint, or maybe it's a Christian Pache, or maybe it's, you know, an Austin Riley. Guys like that, and maybe still, you know, again, that to me, yeah, if you're saying could the Braves make that trade, absolutely. I do think that this offseason is when the Braves will start making more of those moves, because
yes. It
is time. It is time for them at that point to say, we will take our prospect depth and make our current wave. And hey,
because you got to draw some fans to build a dome over that stadium. how many rainouts have they had this year?
A lot.
It's a disaster.
But again, we were talking about this before we started this. But Freddie Freeman being able to play third base kind of opens up some options too.
It does. That's
because
been
if
stunning.
Freddie Freeman is your third baseman, you know, then you say, huh, that fills a hole.
Why didn't Canada think of this when they could have had Votto and Freeman? What were they thinking? And then you could have moved Brett Lowry to third to shortstop. I guess he's not even playing anymore anywhere. Might have helped there. Maybe they should have tried Freddie Freeman at shortstop.
So Kyle, we got a prospect question for you, which is Jack Cecil asked, how has your outlook on Daniel Johnson changed? Seems very similar to Jose Siri. Now, unlike Siri, Daniel Johnson does not have a Midwest League record 36 game hitting streak.
So he also has a very forgettable game.
37 this afternoon.
Oh, I already
got to. Yeah, they had an afternoon game.
Hey, I got to start writing. I got to dust off
the Francisco
Mejia hit streak charts. You know that were updated just last year, so those are fresh.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? You see, guys, you know, it's kind of fun. There's always college. Every year, I feel like there's reports we get on college performers, and you say, "Well, I don't know how the hit's going to be." But you look at it, and the hit is there demonstrably. But, you know, so it's people trying to project, well, it worked at this level, but not this level. Daniel Johnson's a guy, he always hit at New Mexico mm-hmm. State. And he's
but it was New Mexico, so right. It's like you went, well 500 average there is pretty good. It's not right. Well, blow you away.
New Mexico State plays really, really low. Like, talk about
and altitude.
Low-level D1. Like, we're talking about Division I schools across the country. But, like, even in the context of the WAC, it's like, in all athletics, like the bottom of the WAC.
And he has tools too. I like your Siri comp from the standpoint of this is the guy
that
can really.
Call. I didn't say it.
But the question. Yeah. It comps from Siri, and I would say that he has legit tools. He can really throw. And if you said breakout, he is. I don't want to compare him to Austin Hayes because Austin Hayes is a better prospect. And has moved quicker.
He's a little bit lesser because I think his tools are a little bit below. He probably runs better.
But that
Austin
is
Hayes.
The other breakout
but
college
that's it.
Performer.
I love that you just mentioned that because I was going to say Austin Hayes has been the one that's been on my radar and I didn't realize until yesterday. I think we had a question on Twitter about this and about Daniel Johnson. I looked him up. I was like, oh, that New Mexico State guy. Yeah. And he's having a great year.
He's having a great year.
I highlight him in Helium because, again, it's one of those things. There's always those two or three guys who slip through. Like, they've always hit, but yet there were seemingly doubts about it. And then
at some point, the doubts go away when you keep hitting.
Also, the kind of thing that the Nationals needed. This is an organization that, you know, could use a breakout minor league player, and they've had a couple of them. But when healthy, Juan Soto broke out this year, and then obviously Victor Robles is a great player, a great prospect who still hasn't quite taken that next. I think we would have predicted him to take the Ronald Acuna leap that Ronald Acuna's taken. Like at the beginning of the year, if you'd said Victor Robles contending for minor league player of the year, it would have been like, yeah, sure. But instead, Acuna's kind of had the year that we thought that Robles would have. But so for a Nationals organization that could use some good prospect news, I mean, first, I guess the best news that they've had is Brian Goodwin graduating from prospect status and being productive in the major leagues for them when they've kind of needed him. But Johnson's been the other one, and that's just a power speed guy. He's pretty interesting. I like that story.
Before we wrap up, we did promise also we were going to talk about the fact Adrian Beltre, we're not going to talk about the manufactured Adrian Beltre story of today. That is
shame, Doug Gottlieb.
But we did want to talk about John and I had a rather interesting animated we have animated discussions.
I heard it through my cubicle is a couple down from their office. We all heard it in the office.
So and basically what it came down
through
to
through my headphones.
Some things can't be helped. The microphone actually for this Facebook Live is actually two rooms away.
But the question was is Beltre Hall of Famer is not a
question.
Not a question. And what we really is where does Beltre end up among the all-time third basemen? My case for putting him in that upper circle, that highest echelon of third baseman, really is, admittedly, it comes down to defense, which his defense is exceptional, and longevity that has allowed him. My big point is still to be determined, because the key part is I know he's been hurt this year, but when healthy, he continues to hit. He's at 3,000 hits now. If he wants to stick around, it's not inconceivable. When you get to 3,000 hits, you aren't that far from going from being one of the, you know, okay, 3,000 is already.
With 31 guys with 3,000 hits.
Right. It's a very high bar already. But you get to 3,400, 3,500, and then you are in the top 10 of all time. You get to 3,500, you could end up in the top 5 of all time.
Think about, you know, Tony Gwynn. He's at 3,141, and it's an astounding career. And with Adrian Beltre and what puts him really in the same echelon for me as the Mike Schmidts, the Brooks Robinsons, the Eddie Matthews, the all-time great third baseman, there's a lot to be said for longevity, and it's kind of funny when people talk about, oh, the numbers compilers. Do you know how hard it is to be at an elite level in Major League Baseball for 18 years, 19
right.
years? That's insane. So don't, you know, the compiler argument holds no water. This is a guy who has been, you know, even his quote-unquote down years with the Dodgers and Mariners were still pretty darn good.
Partly because the glove was exceptional.
And then, you know, everything comes together. I mean, I don't think there's an argument this guy isn't one of the 10 best third basemen of all time.
10 best is easy.
You know, right, is inner circle is top five. And for me, it's an easy top five that doesn't include Brooks Robinson, actually. It's Chipper Jones, it's Wade Boggs, it's Michael Jack Schmidt, it's Eddie Matthews, and I'm forgetting the George fifth tenor, George Brett. Those are the guys. Schmidt and Brett drafted, I think, back-to-back picks in 1970.
El Segundo High, George Brett.
I will repeat the old story. I love this story that Brent Strom of the Astros now told me that Rod Dedeaux told him in the 1970 College World Series, they're facing Ohio University with Michael Jack Schmidt on it. Maybe it's Miami of Ohio, whichever one. And he's going over the report the Dodgers gave him. He goes, if this guy were this good, he'd be a Trojan. But that's how good Mike Schmidt was back then. I love that line. But for me, Beltre slots in behind those guys. And the defense is significantly better than some of those guys. But the bat is so far behind Matthews, Schmidt, Brett, and Boggs. And I would say Chipper as well. Those guys, I mean, Adrian Beltre, I'm not trying to poke holes in him. I do think a little of the praise of him this week, and it's good to praise him. He deserves it all. He's a top 10 third baseman. You could argue him six ahead of Brooks Robinson for me. That's an interesting debate. I'd have to delve into that. But those other guys are like 140-ish OPS pluses and very high on-base percentages and power. Adrian Beltre is a career 336 on-base percentage. I'm sorry. He's not top five all-time third base with a 336 on-base percentage. He's just not. That is, if you wanted to pick one offensive measure, that's probably the most important one, and 336, that does not put you in the top five all time.
It's an argument, again,
we're having 410, I think it is, for Brett, and 418 for Boggs. Chipper's over 400. Those guys, and Chipper hit for power, similar era player, far superior offensively.
It's a fun debate. I have to say, by having it, John has swayed me more to his argument.
And by volume.
But the other
hopefully
thing...
Hopefully of information as well.
This is only interesting to John and I, but Beltre, I know, Beltre is the only player left in the big leagues, if you don't count Bartolo Colon, depending on what hour we're talking about this now. But he's the only player left who precedes he's a big leaguer before I was a baseball American.
Beltre, I don't think there's anybody around.
I was going to say, Beltre does not do that for you.
I got a lot of guys.
But Beltre was, I believe, a Dodger before you were at Baseball America. Or it's right at it. So
what did he sign, 97?
Because he signed as a 15-year-old.
Right. But I think I started September 96. So
yeah, I want to say.
Don't know if he signed by then.
ML debut was 99.
That's the year Kyle was born, right? I'm kidding.
No, I'm not that young. I'm an '80s born. I'm getting old.
Jeff Sansbury, by the way. But did Schmidt check his own swing and a home run from one knee?
No, but no one had that 500th home run. But, little shimmy.
By the way, I do say if you're saying if the upper echelon of third baseman is one, it's Mike Schmidt.
For me, it is Mike Schmidt. Although Eddie Matthews, offensively, kind of underrated. That guy walked a ton and hit 500 home runs. I mean, he was pretty good.
He's incredible. Him and Hank Aaron in the same lineup, that's really something to think about.
That's all time. I mean, that's Yankees-esque. I mean, it was the...
And just like the Braves, they won one World Series. They had these two all-time players. They won one World Series in Milwaukee. And in Atlanta, they had this all-time rotation. They won one World Series. That's their quota.
With a Hall of Fame third baseman on the field at the same time.
That's right.
And a fringe, I know I'm biased, a fringe Hall of Fame center fielder and a fringe Hall of Fame first baseman.
Those are great Braves teams. They just ran into better Yankees teams. I don't think they ever choked. I really just think that the Braves dynasty was great. The Yankees dynasty was one better.
That's a perfect way to end this. We thank you for all the questions. We had a lot of great questions. We couldn't get to all of them, obviously, but we do thank you for all of them. For Kyle and John, I'm JJ. We thank you again. Today's podcast and Facebook Live was brought to you, as it always is, by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel. We got hats. We got shirts. They've actually even got other cool gear, too. Visit baseballism.com to check it all out. We appreciate it. We thank you, and we'll be back next week for another Facebook Live.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.